He once said, love it or leave it, USA number one. He also dropped a Hawks by a Million inside of Kinnick Stadium just last year. You can see by the title, it's Ricky Stanzi for number 300. We're pumped to bring you guys this episode, and I think you guys are going to really enjoy this one. Ricky is a great guy. He provides a lot of great insight and takes us back through a lot of great memories in Hawkeye history. Let's have a day, baby. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washoe Walk-Ons fans, episode 300 of the podcast. I'm feeling like Gerard Butler right now, absolutely fired up because we have an absolute Iowa legend in the building. 10 years ago, somebody I never would have thought I was going to be talking to, especially not on a podcast where we share in a fraternity of Iowa football. One of the legends, one of the best quarterbacks to ever suit it up in the black and gold. Ricky Stanzi, welcome to the Washoe Walk-Ons, and thank you very much for being here, man. It's an honor.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm fired up.
You got the wave hat and all. You're looking good.
I tried to dress the part for today.
I got to get me one of those. What do you think about, what do you think about the wave? What did you think when that came out?
I think it's awesome. I mean, it took the country by storm. You know, it kind of it showed up, and it's right in line with Coach Ferentz and all the things that he's done for the program and how much he's done for the Children's Hospital. And that was a big part of what we did back when I was there, was just paying regular visits, just going over there and kind of spending time with those kids and brightening up their day. And Hawkeye football means a lot to those people over there. And it's kind of that one bright spot that they have every Saturday. And then, you know, to kind of turn around and the whole stadium to be there, I mean, it's huge. And you hear all these different, you know, media people across the country say it's the best tradition in college football. And I really think it is. And it's a tip of the cap to Coach Ferentz. Just another thing that he does that's first class.
Yeah. They broke ground on that hospital just a couple years after you graduated, right? Kind of when we came in. That's one cool thing we got to do that maybe you didn't. You did a lot of cool things, and we're going to get to all that. The Iowa Hawkeyes, what'd you know about Iowa before you got there, high school? Mentor, Ohio, right?
Yeah, Mentor, Ohio. So, you know, I was a Big Ten guy. So I was always, every Saturday morning, put on the TV, we're watching Big Ten football. So I did have an understanding a little bit, you know, about Iowa football. I remember watching a game, and Chandler was at quarterback, Nate Chandler. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a home game. And the crowd to me, I remember, was like, this place seems a little rowdy. Like, it just had a vibe to it. The fans are super close to the sideline. I love the black and gold. I love the unis. Something stuck out in my brain that day when I watched that one Big Ten game. You know, growing up, obviously you like Ohio State. I liked certain players too in the Big Ten, so I'd kind of bounce around. And then it really wasn't until junior, senior year when Coach O'Keefe showed up and I saw that Iowa, that Hawkeye logo again in the school. And I was in love with the program really from the beginning. And it always was kind of like probably number one. And I was kind of flirting with some MAC schools, and it was really a lot of MAC programs. And then Iowa was that one Big Ten school that was willing to take a shot on me. And I wanted to play Big Ten football. And once I got to meet Coach Ferentz and get to see the campus, I was sold. There was nobody that could change my mind after that.
I was going to ask, I didn't know if you had any other Big Ten offers. So Iowa was the only one.
Yeah. Iowa was the only one. I was, you know, talking with Michigan State, talking with Purdue. Michigan State actually was trying to get me to play wide receiver, as funny as that is.
Wow.
Because I ran a bunch in high school. Yeah, I ran a bunch in high school. But then obviously I didn't do that in college because of our offense and the way we did things. But it was really mostly MAC schools, and I boiled it down to Miami of Ohio. I liked Miami of Ohio. It was a nice school. Shane Montgomery was the head coach. They had a good program. The MAC was just kind of finishing – sort of the, you know, Big Ben had just come through there. There had been a Chad Pennington. There had been a few quarterbacks that had kind of, you know, let it loose there in the MAC for a while. So it was kind of a hot spot. It attracted quarterbacks, but the Big Ten was where I wanted to be.
Did old Rick have some wheels to play?
Well, I led the team in rushing. I mean, take that for whatever it means. I was probably a better athlete and faster when I was in high school. A little less weight around, you know, you're used to running because I was like in the shotgun, sure, running that whole like spread option attack that we were all doing back then. But then, you know, once you got to Iowa, it was try to perfect the passing in the pocket and try to understand and really be a field general.
Did you wish that you had the opportunity to maybe do a little bit more dual threat in college?
Yeah. I mean, I liked the idea of, I always thought that it was kind of stealing sometimes when you're in that option read and the DN's crashing, especially with us, no one's seeing me as a threat.
Yep.
So you've kind of got the, you know, there was one time in the Penn State game, the whiteout game, that was 09. I pulled the ball and it was one of those, like, Coach O'Keefe was like, you're lucky you got a first down on that, because that's either like you're in big trouble, or, you know, it's if you do it okay, nobody says nothing.
Yep.
But if I was to mess that up, I'd be in big trouble. But that was really the only time.
It's like that.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's like that three-pointer at the end of the game when you're up like two or three and you shoot and everyone's like, no, and then it goes in and they're like, yes.
Yes, it was one of those situations for sure.
Same kind of thing.
Was the vibe from the coaches to let the guys that they recruited to carry the ball? Because that was what they said to us a lot. They were always talking about, you know what, we're going to let the guys who we have here on scholarship run the ball, let you get, distribute it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, for me, I was super fortunate. I had Sean Green behind me really year one. So he's definitely getting the rock. And then it was kind of a little bit of running back by committee a little bit after that. Adam Robinson obviously did a great job. Brandon Wager did a great job. Coker did a great job. All those guys kind of filled in here and there, you know, to kind of help us move the chains. But we had a hell of an O-line. And we, you know, that's been a staple at Iowa. So running the ball was huge. And Coach Ferentz, I remember when we first got there as quarterbacks, when Coach handed us the checklist, like, you know, you're going to be dealing with these checks when you get on the field. And we didn't do that in high school. So now that was one of the big things. I don't know if people know that about Iowa football, is that when the quarterback comes to the line, you've got a sort of a menu that you get to go through. You know, I get to kind of put us in a better run. So I loved that part of the game. I loved how Coach Ferentz put that in our lap as a QB, where, hey, if you see an advantageous look, get us into a better run, shift guys around. So he gave us a lot of freedom, and that kind of let us sort of curate what we saw out there on the field from a quarterback standpoint and put us in a good position in the run game. And when our run game was flying and it was going well, that made my job easier. Yeah. So I was always game for turnaround and handed, because my first year I had Sean Green. So that was really kind of our security blanket on offense. We give Sean the ball, we knew he would get 100 yards just because he would bully everybody and he was a hell of a football player. And it made my life a lot easier when I was trying to get adjusted to seeing the field and staying in the pocket and understanding my reads and where the ball needed to go.
You ever feel a little spicy and check menu five?
I mean, there's times when you want to, you know, you maybe want to do something that you probably shouldn't do. Or, I mean, I did that a shit ton with the ball. When I would throw it, I try to fit it into a tight spot that maybe wasn't, you know, the right time to do that. And that was kind of the transition for me. From, you know, year one to two was, okay, here's when you take your shots, here's when you don't, here's how you play the game to kind of put us in a better position to win football games. And, you know, our defense and our special teams, you guys know, Coach Ferentz always talks about all three phases complement each other. Everybody knows that. And it doesn't ring more true than when you're in tight football games. And in 09, we were in a lot of tight football games. In 2010, we were in a lot of tight football games. So, you know, those 2 years right there kind of, for me, were years where I learned kind of when to put on the gas pedal a little bit and then kind of when to pull off. And, you know, we had sort of a rough draft of where we should go, but there was times where I would kind of draw something up just right there in the dirt that maybe wasn't a check, but everybody knew what we were doing, right? We have a good idea what the base plan is, so we can go ahead and work into this play. I feel comfortable with the guys I have around me. Don't put them in a bad position by calling something that maybe wasn't in a playbook for 2 weeks. And then you put them on the spot when you're in Michigan or something like that. That's not a good idea. So
I think the fans, if they had the choice, they would have been okay with Ricky calling all the plays. I think they would have been all right with that.
A lot of throws, a lot of go routes, a lot of shots.
You mentioned close games, and you did play in a lot of them. And I think maybe this is just an Iowa thing because we played in a lot of them too.
Yeah, I was gonna say we share that in common. We played in a lot of time.
That's the style of Iowa football, and not only in 09 and 10, which are maybe the more, I don't know, Hollywood seasons of yours, you know, later in your career, but in 08, you came in and there was a, you know, no lack of quarterback controversy, right? Like there's always going to be, you know, the number two quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team. You know, all of those cliches. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you get your first start at home against Iowa State.
Yes. Or no, it was Florida International.
You did.
I think it was the week before that. Yes. Okay. So I started Florida International. We got a good lead on those guys.
Yep.
Jake came in the second half. So I had a really good Florida International game. Mm-hmm. And then I came back that next week against Iowa State and I shit the bed and they pulled me and they put Jake back in.
Yep.
Then we go to Pittsburgh. Yep. And that was kind of Jake's kind of like final go at it. And then I got the job back in Northwestern.
You guys win that Iowa State game. I think it was raining and muddy maybe that game too. It, just tough conditions. You're trying to gain your footing, win the job. You guys win that close game.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next 3 weeks, you lose at Pitt. You lose – let me pull it up here actually because
we lost at home to Northwestern.
Yep.
Then we maybe went on the road to Michigan State.
Yep, and lost there. And those three losses were by a combined 9 points.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember at that time – I mean, you're trying to win a job. Feel good about the Iowa State game, and I'd love to hear your opinion on the Cy-Hawk rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
Then you lose three close games, and my sense is that you guys feel like you have a good team, but you just couldn't get over the hump for these 3 weeks. What was it like during that month? What was the vibe in the room?
Yeah, so, well, first thing was when Coach Ferentz kind of let me know, like, hey, we're going to go with you. Like, after the Pittsburgh game, he's like, I'm not going to do this, like, back and forth thing all season long. Yep. So that was kind of like from Northwestern on, you're the quarterback. And that was huge for me because it made me comfortable to, like, okay, I can go play now. I don't got to look over my shoulder. I can just let it loose. If I make mistakes, that's okay. They're going to lean on me and keep me in there. And I felt like each week there, I felt good. I felt like I was progressing. I know we wanted to win, but I was just getting more and more comfortable in the system. Michigan State one was like, I was like, dang, dude, we were right there. We had a shot at winning that. I had a couple turnovers early on that were lackadaisical. One was like on a sneak, ball got popped out. So there was laziness at the beginning and like things that I knew I needed to clean up. But more and more, I felt comfortable just being in the saddle, being the starting guy, going out there and doing the game prep and all those little things that I watched Drew do for a year and watched Jake do for a year. And I learned so much from both of those guys before I got my shot. And you really learn from everybody in the quarterback room. And so those games were tough, but you hit the head on, you know, you hit it around the head there. We definitely felt like we had something. And that kind of late end of 08, middle of the season, late end 08 kind of led into what made 2009 really great. And kind of go back to the Cy-Hawk game. That was totally new for me. Like you asked about Iowa and stuff like that. I didn't even know Iowa State existed.
Oh boy.
And then once I got there, I was like, oh, this rivalry is legit. And so 07, we were at their place.
Yep.
And that was when it made sense. When they, like, we were walking out and kids were like whipping Skittles at us. And I was like, what is this place? Where am I? Like, you know, I'm like in Ames, Iowa. I've never been there in my life. But you know, that locker room, it's like a closet.
Yep. We're
trying to navigate through here. And they were rowdy. They were a rowdy bunch. It was a blast, though. It was a fun game. I love playing in Ames. It's a cool environment every time you're there. Every time we play Iowa State, it's a good environment. But down there, it feels like their Super Bowl. And you got to be ready to go there because that crowd, they want to take you out of it early.
It's such a fun place to play.
It is. It's a wild place. And you know, they got a good football team. And they those guys play hard. And they got that. You know, they're cut from the same cloth. They're Midwestern boys. So there are a lot of good games there. And it's a fun rivalry to be a part of. And it's cool to kind of learn about a rivalry when you first get into it. Something maybe you weren't a part of as in your youth, but you grow to appreciate it as you kind of, you know, have to kind of go against those guys. You have to go play. That 07 game hurt. You know, we were like, okay, we need to come back and we need to win this game in 08. And I didn't play well in 08, but thank God we still got the win. But 2009, we were able to go up there and we struggled early and then we kind of settled in. We were able to beat them by a pretty good score that year.
When you were at their
place. So I know you're the quarterback, the general. what you say goes. But around here, we don't lie to the people. They are not cut from the same cloth as us. As soon as they can even turn it into a rivalry again, they can even sniff the same clothing store to buy their material. But they're not even allowed in our stores right now.
What's the overall record? Is it, it's so lopsided, right?
I think so, yeah.
It
was bad for a while, and then they made it a rivalry with Dan McCartney. Yep. And when you guys were there, I think it was the same. You walk out the locker room, out of the building, and down the side of that cement building. And
yeah, I don't think they changed things.
And their student section's right there. Did you, even back then, I have to imagine it was like, and they get there early. So you go out for game prep, and you're already getting the chance of like, fuck the Hawkeyes, right?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, the things that you get yelled at you are, you know, they're all time. I mean, it's just the things that are yelled, not only at Iowa State, this could be not just the kind of, say, those fans, but I've had things yelled at me at Minnesota and Michigan State, and it's great. I love that. It gives you it's chuckle. You chuckle at it. It's humorous, I think.
The adrenaline.
It fires stuff. You up. Yeah, it fires you up. It's great. I think that stuff's awesome. It's like when I see the NBA guys, they want to you can tell they're like mad or like bothered by it.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, they're lighting a fire under your ass. I mean, you should enjoy that. It gives you free motivation, sort of a free, you know, like internal want to prove it wrong to these guys. But that's a game you expect to win. You expect to bury them. You expect to embarrass them every single time. And it's like that little brother thing, like put them in their place. Don't let them breathe. It's their Super Bowl. And then they'll go win, you know, three games, maybe the rest of the season. That was kind of how it was. Like, hey, they're going to give you a shot. Like, they're not going to play like they played on tape the first three games or whatever when they saw you. They're going to bring like another level of intensity. So I remember Coach Ferentz being like, hey, what you're seeing on tape, and maybe you think like, oh, they were close with Kent State. Don't look at that, because when they show up, like, these dudes will be ready to go, because this is what they want. They want to be wearing the black and gold. But, you know, so that's part of it too. Nothing's they'd love changed. To be over there on the other sideline.
Yeah. You've talked a lot about how 08 sort of set you up for 09. And 09 is a special year. Pat Anger, and I'm sure you've got some thoughts about Pat.
Legend.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on Pat, but he, you know, his big thing when he comes on or when we talk to him is like, he always ends our conversation. Drake and I, we have a text thread with him, and he always ends it with, and 09 would have beat the shit out of 15. And just like, he just continues to make sure that we know that. 09 was a special year. Let's talk about Pat. What made Pat a special teammate and football player?
Oh gosh. I mean, endless amount of things. First off, he's just a great friend. Like, he's just a funny guy. Everybody likes to be around him. He was friends with everyone in the locker room. Like, he kind of had a relationship with everybody, with all the different, you know, even the different positions, different groups. And you knew not to get in his way. Like, he was a friendly guy, but I never wanted to cross Pat. And I remember one time, I don't know what I said to him, but I must have done something that pissed Pat off. It was like a workout. We were walking back. This was, you guys probably don't even know how it was set up back then. Nope. Or I can't even really explain it, but
we were part of the
Jacobson building.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, we walked back through, and like, I just remember one time where Pat like grabbed me and like grabbed me by the chest and just like put me on like the pool table and just like set me down. I don't even know what it led to. I'll have to ask Pat about it for memory, but I was like, oh, like this dude is he's like an MMA fighter that's playing middle linebacker. It's like, I think of Pat in that movie where, Tom Hardy is the MMA guy and he's kicking the shit out of everybody. Like, that's Pat Anger to me. Just like, he was the stud. Like, he was the guy. And it was like, when he was anchored at middle linebacker, it was like, okay, we're always got a shot with this guy running. He was the quarterback over there. He was the leader of the defense. And, you know, he was a huge part of what we did. And he made things fun. Like, he made practice fun. He made it exciting, but it was fun, but he wasn't a clown, and it was still competitive. He was able to play both sides of that. And that's a very unique quality to have as a football player, because you'll see people, they clown too much and then they get distracted and they're not able to play. He was able to interject enough humor into it to where everybody was loose and having fun, but we were competing. Don't make any mistake about it. We were competing. And if you know Pat, you know that to be true.
We want to let you guys know that this show is supported by DRF Sports, the title sponsor of the Washed Up Walk-Ons. We always get to pop in here and thank them. And you guys know what month it is. It is March. And what March brings is the postseason of college basketball, a glorious time where you fill out brackets, they get busted, and everybody has a little bit of fun, right? How much fun would it be to maybe use DRF Sports and their platforms, the DRF Cash Grab app, or just the Sportsbook app that they just released, or maybe even go down to old Osceola where I was a couple weeks ago and check out that new Sportsbook there in person. But why not use those avenues to help bet on some of these games? Add a little skin to the game. You know, like you got Iona playing DePaul and you have no horse in that race, but you throw a quick Kluver-sized $10 bet down on it and now you can sweat that whole thing. And I'm not even going to give you crap for it because I think $10 is a fine amount for a bet. Well, DRF allows you that chance. They also allow you to be educated as you get into the sports betting world because they provide all the best data, analytics, and information to help you place smart bets. DRF, supporting this podcast and supporting people everywhere when it comes to sports betting. DRF, sports bet smarter. We also want to take a second to thank the goats of merchandise, AdCraft. They're the best. If you guys have been paying attention to our social media, you'll know and see that we just recently released the new modern HBAM design, a brand new Hawks by a Million design. I call it the block design. Can't take credit for it. Saw it on another t-shirt, stole the concept from them. Thought, wow, that would look great with the old Hawks by a Million, the old HBAM on it. And guess who helped us turn that idea into reality? Well, AdCraft did. Right? Not only do they help us with the designs, the art, but they help us bring that to life in a way that we can produce at a mass quantity and bring to you guys, the walk-on army, and everybody else who likes to sport the HBAM all over the state of Iowa, the Midwest, and beyond. You guys have heard me talk about it before. Not only are they helping us with our custom merch, but they could help you guys as well. It's hard to know where to begin. You ask yourself, what products should I choose? How much inventory should I order? These are all questions that I have had because Kevin and Drake don't help me with anything. And that's sort of by design because Kevin's got a real job and I don't know if I want Drake's help. But when I have to figure this stuff out by myself, boy, is it sure nice to have my guys at AdCraft to help me through this process. Okay, they take they have the entire process down. And if you guys have ideas, hey, we should put that on a t-shirt, or hey, we've got a softball league that we want to make shirts for, or hey, we need a shirt or new, you know, I wouldn't call it merchandise, but a new design or gear for our work, you can do that. If you've got a AU sports team or maybe a high school sports team organization where you want to organize a fundraiser, they're great for that as well. Their custom merch web service is great for booster clubs, athletic teams, companies, and much more. Visit AdCraftWebStores.com to bring your custom merch to life. AdCraftWebStores.com. Go Hawks. How many times did it get chippy in practice going back and forth?
A lot. I mean, we had a lot of chippiness. You know, we had James Ference, and that's something that he was always fighting somebody. I remember one time we had a fight and we had a helmet get thrown into a pile once, and coach like brought it up on the Jumbotron. He slowed it down and he's like, we can't, slowing down a helmet flying into a pile on like day four of camp. Like, we can't have this. We just can't have it. But there was always a good chance for a fight between the interior seven at some point. You know how camp goes. Yeah. We're all friends. Hey, it's good to see you. And then like by that like fourth padded practice, everyone's like, all right, motherfucker, let's go. It's just like everybody's fighting and it's just, you're looking for another jersey at that point. So it gets chippy and I love that stuff. That's part of football. I say I love it because I'm the dude on the outside talking shit as I'm right. If I get closer, like
somebody, you got the red jersey, dude. Everybody knows not to touch you. Yeah,
somebody get the quarterback. Don't hit his hand. So it was like you can talk shit, no one's gonna fight you.
In that sense, it was like Ricky and I, we were kind of the same. Like the specialists, we just watched from the side with the popcorn, right?
Oh
like,
yeah. You're not in there. They're not even gonna let you get in there if you want to. You don't want to be in there first off because it's a big body versus a big body, and you don't have any part in that. You're not going to be moving those dudes around.
Drake, how many parallels do you hear in Rick's stories versus ours? I think about they're throwing Skittles at him at Iowa State. We pulled up one year. We had grandma and grandpa's just giving us the birds.
And young kids, six-year-olds, man.
Yeah, cussing us out.
People who, like, in any other setting in their entire life, their parents would freak out if they were doing this. But because it was to our bus, the parents were just like,
have at it. Sure. Today's your day, kid. And yeah, then let these kids have it.
And then with the fight story, I remember distinctly our freshman year in 2013, Louis Trinque-Passat got a hold, like he, you know, in the middle of the play, he got a hold of one of the offensive linemen's face mask and it came off in the scuffle and someone shoved him. And then he used it as a weapon against that offensive lineman. And then when you talk about Pat, Josie Jewell,
way too much Patricia love, first of all.
Yeah. Josie Jewell gave us the same sort of security, right? I'm sure like James Morris, when you threw a pick or the offense didn't get it done and you came off the field, right, there was that sense of like, they got it. Like it's going to be okay.
I leaned on the defense a lot in 09. I was like leaning like this for a couple games, hanging out on them. I mean, I was just chilling on their shoulders, dude. I mean, that front seven was something else. It was a lot of security between our special teams, the run game and the defense. I felt like I could really play free. Like I could try to fit a ball into a window because that defense was, I know how good they were. I had to play against them every single day. And I mean, there was times we had to take Claiborne and Ballard and we had to put them on the sideline just so we could like have like a smooth operating flow when we were trying to kind of have an offensive drill, if you will, right? Like we had to kind of move them up. Yeah, we had like, okay, slow these guys down. They're creating too much havoc. Get them off the field for a second so that we can kind of run some plays. But those guys were, you know, our defense was really the heart of it. They were the pulse of what made 09 great. And they, you know, it all kind of culminated at that Georgia Tech game. Well, what are they going to do with the option? Well, I'll show you exactly what they're going to do. I'm not going to let them cross the freaking yard.
You guys ate them. You ate them. Yeah, alive. I mean,
it was a display by Coach Parker. And it was a display by Adrian, and it was fun to watch from the sideline. Once again, like if we get up on these guys, they're an option team. They don't have a chance. And of course, Coach Parker, I mean, you know, rest in peace. He absolutely changed his defense. You know, it went from under eight lock to like an overlook and just completely changed what they were doing. And they snuffed it out and they killed it. And, you know, he knew that because back in the day, his old Michigan State days, he knew how to run that or defend against that triple option back in the day when they used to run that a lot. But that was just to show you how good that defense was. And you know how simple the defensive calls are. But you play really good fundamental football there. It almost reminds you of kind of that Seahawks team, the Legion of Boom, where like they're only playing cover three, but nobody could beat it.
Three.
You know what it is. Like it's not like it's a magical thing. It's not anything special. They're not disguising, but you can't beat the technique and the fundamentals and the brains of all the guys over there. So yeah, our defense was definitely the heartbeat. And you know, they led to what we had in 09.
It was one of those situations, and I'm sure you heard this when you were playing, was the X's and O's don't matter when you got the right Jimmies and Joes. And you guys had some Jimmies and Joes on that.
Right. Players, not plays, you know. Yeah. It's become schoolyard ball, like right around second quarter, going into half, coming out in the third, like, all right, we're in a fight here. We're in a game. Throw the playbook out. Like we need a play. We need to move the chains. We need something to get us in the end zone. And that was what I've always loved about football, was that it just kind of turned into a fight. You know, you got tighter with your group as the game went on. You felt that like sort of that bond. And that was one thing I always took away from the way Coach Ferentz ran things, was, you know, how disciplined and how strict it was early on in the week when you're getting ready for the game. And, you know, we're not making mistakes. And, you know, if you make a mistake and they're chewing your ass out, you got to correct it. But on Saturdays, it was like the most positive, uplifting environment on the sideline. Like I always felt like there was just nothing but positive vibes up and down that sideline, no matter what happened. And I always point back to that Indiana game where I'd thrown five picks before the fourth quarter even started. Mm-hmm. And I didn't sense any difference from Coach Ferentz. Now, I know me as a person, and me being somewhat of a coach or a teacher, I'd be somewhat irate with my quarterback. Now, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, but the point was he didn't show it. And it was kind of that thing that let us have a lot of success, because it's easy to kind of get away from what you came to focus on doing that day, which was win a football game. When the emotions are high and someone makes a mistake, it's easy to let one mistake ravel into another. And I think Kirk always does a great job of kind of shutting that down and just playing it one play at a time. It gets your brain ready for that during the week. And then when it actually hits, you're like so programmed to just think one play at a time that you're just going, you know, you're just going, and it's just you and the boys. And, you know, it's whoever that guy is over there across from us, we're going to win a football game. And I think we felt like in 09, it didn't matter how many touchdowns we were down. It didn't matter what we needed to do. Somehow, some way, we were going to find a way to win that game, whether it's blocking two kicks or whether it's back-to-back 60, 70-yard touchdown throws. Like, whatever we needed to do, we were going to find a way to do it. But that was instilled with us from, you know, Coach Ferentz, Coach Doyle, and the leaders of that team early on in the season.
I'm curious, just because we've never been able to ask this question, what does it feel like to throw five interceptions in a game? Like, being that you're a human being, you're a yeah. kid in all reality. Like, I'm 27, 4 years removed, and I still kind of feel like a kid. When we were in the program, we were kids. And right. there's a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And I mean, when it gets to that point, what does it feel like? Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but I'll add to that. You're 8-0,
right?
And going for nine.
Sports Illustrated was just there the week before,
right?
Doing like a freaking cover feature on us to make it even worse. I mean, I'll tell you what, I feel like I've always had thick skin. My dad sort of developed that with me. Like, don't be a pussy. Stop complaining. I remember my grandma Rosemary saying, sticks and stones might break your bones, names will never hurt. So it was always like this, don't be a bitch. Like, just don't worry about what anybody's saying. Who cares? Like, develop a thick armadillo skin where nothing can. So that was something that I always tried to carry with me. And it was really put on full display. I wasn't really worried about it, to be completely honest with you. I wasn't. I had pretty good practice up until that point with other games like Michigan. You know, it's a night game, national television, first throw, boom, pick six. Okay, so we're down. Like, all right, well.
Tough start.
Now,
tough start.
Yeah, tough start. Like, next thing we got to do is probably not do that again. So I was used to, like I told you, the Iowa State game in 08. I mean, that was probably the lowest I had felt as a player, because I was like, wow, I just had a really good game. I'm young in the program, and I come back out, and I didn't feel like myself in that game. So I'd had enough moments in the program to where I was ready for something like that, where I could kind of stand on 2 feet and feel good about it. I remember Ryan Donahue came up to me at the beginning of the fourth. He's like, dude, you're going to have the best quarter of your life right here, right now. And I was just like, I remember smiling at him. I'm like, yeah, I'm not phased. Like, I still feel good about it. I felt good about the decisions that I was making in the game. I just felt like, for whatever reason, the throws weren't getting there. If there was just something that was a little bit off, but I didn't feel like my confidence took a hit. And then, you know, coach dials up a little, you know, bootleg to Marvin, catches it, and he goes. And I'm like, all right, here we go. And the next play, we run a double crosser. DJ catches it, crosses somebody up, and he goes. And it was just like, here it is. Like, this was kind of the theme of the season. Whatever it is, whatever we need to do, someone's got to step up. And it was kind of like, that was your moment of, hey, you've had some mistakes, but there's still another quarter left to play, right? And until the clock runs out to zero, I mean, we've got a shot. So it's not the most comfortable feeling in the world. But once again, if you're kind of that mindset where you're not going to let things phase you, have a short memory, they teach you that as a quarterback. I use all those things really in that moment when they were needed to kind of keep my cool. And once again, it helps when you have a Coach Ferentz that he doesn't bat his eye. He doesn't get mad at you. He's got the same look that he had on my recruiting trip on his face when I'm walking off the sideline. So that's very reassuring when the head guy's on your, got your back.
I can hear in your voice and the way you describe that, you have a little bit of specialist mindset in you. Cause as a specialist, there's a lot of like, specifically we played Ohio State 2017. We started that game. We had the pick six to start the game, first play. Mm-hmm. As a specialist, you like to have a few practice reps before you go out and do it on the field, because you don't play for 15, 20 minutes in between plays.
Right.
And I just sat down because it was like, okay, Ohio State, they're probably going to drive the field here. I'm going to hang out, wait till our offense get. And it's like, I can remember thinking of those moments and several other big moments in our career where I was just like, well, ball's in my hands. Like, you know, there's a little bit of comedic nuance to it of like, hey, this
absolutely
is, like, let's have fun with this too, you know.
It's almost humorous. I remember laughing when Kirk Cousins, they hit the freaking hook and ladder at Michigan State, and I just remember like chuckling. I don't know why it was funny, but I thought it was funny. Like, it was just like, I'm like, all right, like, this is what it's got to be. Let's do this now.
Yep.
And so there is a little bit of that. I can totally agree with you on that. That's awesome. Cool. You pointed that out.
Yeah. 2009. And I don't know, I'm very curious to know how much you actually think about this or walk down memory lane. After that game we just talked about, you guys end up winning against Indiana. You're 9-0. And like you said, it felt like that year, and the way you describe it is very, very similar to how we felt in 15. Like, you could have run out aliens from outer space, and it did not matter. We were gonna find a way to win that football game,
right?
And that's how you described 2009, and you guys face Northwestern at home, mm-hmm. and you get hurt, mm-hmm. and you lose your first game of the year. And a lot of people, even to this day, this 2009 season, there's so many like little things about it too that we could go into. What was the feeling like after that game, and then into Ohio State, another loss, close OT, 27-24. I mean, you're still right there in these games.
Hell of a game. That was amazing. A hell of a game.
Amazing. And the nostalgia that it brings up for me, because Drake and I were like sophomores in high school, and like Ricky Stanzi and Pat Anger are literal Jesus to us. And turns out Pat's just ugly and fat.
You actually meet us. You're like, oh, they're just like us.
You've at least stayed in shape and keep your like neck clean.
I try.
What was the vibe after that, after a couple losses? Because you may echo this, maybe not. You're a competitor. I imagine you will. I think a lot of people feel like if you don't get hurt and, you know, things go the right way, you guys can beat anybody in the country that year, literal national champion contenders in 2009.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that a lot from people, and I try not to play the what if game, you know, just mm-hmm. because I think you got to play the games and you got to win those games and you got to be in those games. And you kind of only deal with the hand that you've been dealt. And the Northwestern game was really felt like a buzzkill. It was like, cause we came out humming in that game. I think we put up 14 or 17 quick. Mm-hmm. And then I threw a pick on like a backside, you know, didn't check the corner coming over on a backside post, and we had a pick. And then like, I think we followed it up. I might've been the next series with, you know, what happened in the end zone when I went down and in the ankle. And I just remember when I got hit, I was like, oh, that wasn't right. Like, something wasn't right. I thought I maybe dislocated the ankle or something because of the, you know, what I was feeling down there. And it was just one of those, I thought, I'm like, oh, season's over. Like, this could be it, right? This might be like the end of the season. So it was like we were at the high of highs after that Indiana game. And then we come in Northwestern, the first couple, you know, the first quarter and a half sort of felt good. And it was like, here we go. We're humming. We're going to win this one. And then boom, it was just like everything changed. You know, I went down, I was out, and then I had surgery the next day. And then I was, you know, trying to speed up James and help James get ready for his big game. You know, this poor dude, he's got to lace up and he's got to go into a fire with a really good football team. And he's got to play against Ohio State, who is really tough and always well coached and just a really tough challenge for your first game. And he did admirable. He did great. And we had a chance there late. And that goes to show you, just kind of back to that, what we talked about with Coach Ferentz, having people ready, playing competitive,
next man
up mentality, that kind of thing is real. And, you know, I knew after kind of getting the little diagnosis and talking to, you know, Amendola, who did my surgery, and we did this, you know, tightrope thing. He's like, hey, we can get you back by a bowl game. So I was like, all right, well, let's kind of weather this storm. Let's get a win here. If we can get a win here at Ohio State, hell yeah, we want to win this. We expect to win this game every time. And that was a heartbreaker too, because it felt like, wow, we could get that one. Maybe that would have put us in a position to maybe have a chance for the national champ. I know it was a different scenario back then. Obviously the college football playoff wasn't the same. There wasn't a Big Ten championship in Indy. So there was a few things that were different that year. But yeah, I know I've had people approach me with that and say, oh man, if you didn't go down, it's like, you know, maybe so, maybe not. I don't know. But whatever it was, I mean, that season was one of those where there was a lot of adversity at different times for whatever reason, whether it was five picks or whether it was need to block two kicks or, you know, whether it was withstanding a hook and ladder late, or if it's a, you know, busted ankle. But it just kind of, in total, that season was a resilient season where, you know, a group of guys was able to kind of get stuck on a singular thought of just winning football games together. And when you have that, you let the chips fall where they may, it's always a good season and it's always a good end of it. And it's like kind of, you know, the credit to that is people are still talking about that season and they love that season and it brings back good memories. And I think that's the big thing for an Iowa football, or if even in a 15, a 2009, those seasons, like, dude, these fans don't forget that shit.
Yeah.
Like they do not forget that. And I, that was one of the big things I learned about Iowa was, oh, they don't have, this is pro football. Yep. Out here, you know, in Ohio, there's a ton of stuff to distract you. You have your Ohio State football, you have the Browns, you know, you have all these different teams that are around. So I was never, everybody, they got Joe Burrow. Everybody was loving Ohio State, but there's other things to distract you. Whereas in Iowa, like it was Iowa football. So that has never been more clear to me than when I left. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, you know, now I'm 34 and, you know, it's still something that people approach me about, or they want to talk to you about on social, or they want to relive those memories because they remember those battles and those moments are big for them. So I'm always kind of appreciative about how everything finished. And, you know, it was a great season either way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was it, like you said, people remember it and it's one of the best seasons in the KF era for sure. You come back the next year and I, you know, 2010 is another good year. It's not as good as 2009. But I have a personal anecdote about this year. And actually at the time, you know, so I guess we would have been, sophomores in high school. My best friend in high school went D2, played at Southwest Minnesota State. And probably more than he'd like to admit, modeled his game after you. He was a quarterback. Set a bunch of records in Iowa. He was no Ricky Stanzi. But we went to the 2010 Michigan State game. Number 5 Michigan State comes to town. You guys are ranked 18th, and you guys absolutely dismantle them. Kirk Cousins, Le'Veon Bell, didn't matter. 37-6, it wasn't – I mean, you guys literally ran away with the thing. It's probably the game that's closest in feeling to the Ohio State game in 2017, where, like, you know, in that gap of, like, we maybe weren't supposed to win this game and somehow we won by 30.
Right.
There aren't a lot of those that happen. And those two games have a little similar, 16-year-old Tyler and Blake were at that game on the east sideline. Our dads found us tickets like 30 minutes before the game. They were sitting somewhere else. That day it was the sash pick.
Yes.
To hide. Legendary runs down the sideline. Right. Dives. Greenwood had a pick, I think, that day. I mean, you had a bunch of dudes on that team and it was sort of like a legendary day. I think it was Halloween. And after the game, the stands, the fans rushed the field and my buddy had his eye on you the entire time as we got down to the field. And I think he came, like, it was the biggest thing for him to walk by and like tap you on the back, like pat you. So I had to put that personal anecdote in there.
That's great.
That probably sparks a memory, right? If, you know, big
win,
fans rush the field. Are there other memories that come to mind that maybe not, you know, fans would say like, you know, they pick out the big games, but maybe ones that for you personally aren't as high profile, but things that stick out about your career, you know, in the 3 years that you played?
Yeah, you know, that was a fun game. I mean, you know, Sash's pick was legendary. We got to go back and talk about Sash's pick against Indiana too. That was like a kind of a shot in the leg for us to get us going and get the, that was like one of those, like, what is this? What just happened?
Tyler Sash in general.
Yeah, he had a knack for making plays. And that was a game where, yeah, you kind of, everything goes right and you jump out in ahead and, you know, just, nothing's going right for them. Everything's going right for you guys. And it's like, you feel like you can't do anything wrong. Yeah. You're hitting on all three cylinders. So that was a fun memory. And 2010, we had, you know, we took our lumps kind of late in the season. We didn't do what we should have done. I particularly didn't play well late in the season, which kind of led to our demise. And, you know, I wish I would have played better in certain spots, specifically late in the season in Minnesota. But, you know, other games that I would look at that probably no one even thinks about, or maybe that sticks out to me. I remember a game. Well, I guess the 08 Penn State game was big. They were number three. We were kind of nobody at that time. And, you know, we were down and we had to come back, and the fans rushed the field for that one. I remember that was like a, wow, this is like, this is the stuff I grew up watching.
Yeah.
You know, you grow up watching like number three teams go down and they rush the field. And like now you're in it. It was wild. So that was one that always sticks out. But a game that I never talk about that kind of was impactful for me though, in my career and like my confidence, would actually be 08 Illinois. And we were on the road. We didn't win this game, but we had kind of, we got down and we were struggling. And then I was able to kind of find something inside of myself where like, I found some confidence that game that kind of helped me in my career. Where like, okay, like you can play with these guys. Like you're meant to be here. You can do this. And I was able to kind of bring us back, get the game tied up when it looked like we weren't going to have anything. And I just remember that moment for me was kind of like a confidence builder where I was like, okay, you have a shot here to do something great. You know, if you put your mind to it and you do all the things that you need to. But it was one of those moments that I think I needed as a QB. Nobody remembers the game because we lost, but it was one of those things where like, for me, it was like, all right, just another kind of little stepping stone as far as confidence goes to kind of push me in the right direction. So I do remember that game from time to time, if I'm thinking back on kind of my career and what helped propel me. But, you know, those, that 08 Penn State, 09 Penn State, forget every time we play those guys, you know, it's a big matchup. And then obviously the Indiana game sticks out. And Michigan State is the one that kind of, Michigan State and Penn State are the games that people kind of always bring back the memories, and they want to talk about those a lot. So those ones are kind of always being circulated because I'm talking about them the most.
Right. The Illinois memory is, I love stories or anecdotes like that. And it sounds like in that one, you found something that just, you know, a couple plays for you, just, it made you feel like you belonged. Like it was one of those.
Yeah. Like I made a few plays that I probably had never made before. You know, I did a few things that I hadn't done on the field that I probably needed to see myself do on tape.
Yeah.
You know, like I need to go on the next day and look at the clicker and be like, hey, you did that. You put it on tape. Like you can do it again. So, you know, you hear coaches say that, like, put it on tape. If you can do that, then you have that skill set. So that was one of those like kind of confidence builders for me as a young player.
That's Drake. I'm asking a lot of questions. You got anything or should I keep going?
I want to know who some of the most feared players you played with were.
Well, definitely Pat. Talking just Iowa boys.
Yeah, I mean, the list of the guy. You were there for 5 years, 4 or 5 years. So
yeah,
those are the guys who Adrian, came to the program.
Yeah, Adrian was a guy that, you know, it was like you weren't going to beat him. He was dominant.
Did he talk much when he was?
No, he's a quiet leader. Okay. You know, he can get fired up, but he doesn't need to because his play does all the talking. You know, Pat wasn't even really necessarily a talker. I don't know if any of us were really talkers. You know, it was, you know how the vibe is in the locker room. It was quiet when coach speaks, and then he speaks, and then we go out and we play. And so he was always big on like, if you need to be motivated, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah.
You should already be motivated. but as far as guys that we feared, you know, I didn't fear anybody necessarily coming up. I was always of the teaching, like when you're a freshman, you shut up, you don't do anything. You try not to look at anybody. Don't do anything wrong. Don't go off sides when it's this conditioning drills. Just try to go unnoticed for a year, come back. Maybe they'll invite you back. Right. Like that was like my thought, like coming
don't
in.
Jump I'm
like,
the line.
Don't jump the line. I remember that in the summer. Oh my God. I came in the summer for like a week or two. Mm-hmm. And I remember Drew Tate. That was the one guy I kind of feared and didn't want to like get on his bad side. Cause I was a fan of Drew Tate from watching quarterbacks. He had the visor, had the top, like he had swagger.
He was swagged out.
He was so swagged out. I would play with him on, you know, NCAA football. he was the dude. So like when I was in the room, like I respected Drew a lot and I didn't want to kind of, you know, I didn't want to look like an idiot in front of him. I remember jumping off sides in summer.
Oh, no.
And like he just like looked down the line at me, and that was just like the stomach goes down, and you know your heart drops into your stomach.
You
like,
already want like, to throw up because you're tired.
I already want to throw up. Yeah, I'm like disappointed. I feel like I just disappointed dad. You know, it's just one of those things. You're like when your father looks at you and he's like, "I'm disappointed in you." It's one of those. Like the last thing you want to do as a freshman is jump off sides when all the seniors are right down there, and you're like Mitch King, Drew Tate, all those, you know, big dogs from Iowa that were there.
Oh my God.
That was like Mitch and Drew were two of the guys where I was like, okay, don't piss those guys off because that would be bad. I remember running off the field. It was Michigan State, the game that you had mentioned where we had lost. We had lost 3-08.
Yep.
And it was that Michigan State. I think it was, I had just fumbled or maybe I threw a pick. It was like my second or third turnover. And he's like, Mitch King's running off and I'm running on. I'm running off. He's like, that's your third one today, asshole. And I'm like, as I'm crossing. And I was just like, and I just like chuckled to myself. I was like, damn, he's right. Like, I got to strap up. Like I got to play better. But that was a memory that always sticks with me. It's funny though. But those dudes, like they kind of helped set the way, you know, set the path for us. And it was, but that was a moment where I was like, all right, yeah, these guys, I gotta play better.
That's awesome.
Those were some of the funner memories of they're moments that are like, they're like, oh shit moments in a sense. Cause something bad happened, but now you laugh about them because it's all fun. And it's all fun afterwards.
Do you remember any?
I genuinely feared Brandon Sheriff.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For us, those guys.
Good idea. Like, yeah. He's a stud.
You had James Morris as a young kid, right?
Yeah.
On your team. By the time we got there, he was like, he was that guy.
Yeah.
He was like,
Captain America.
I think I respected him more than my dad, honestly. Like,
yeah, when James came in, you knew he was going to be a player.
Unreal.
He was super talented in high school. He was around because his pops was, you know, he runs the equipment and everything. So like, he was around, great kid, super respectful. He was kind of the same way that I tried to be like as a freshman. Like, don't talk, just do your job, go unnoticed, and then like make your name on the field, kind of thing. And he did that. All, you know, those guys like Riley Reiff, Sheriff, Bulaga, Ference, all those guys that kind of anchored that front. You know, they were animals. They were big dudes and they were, you know, scary and they were good.
Yeah.
Good at football.
Speaking of
really good football players.
Speaking of Greg Morris, was he stingy with the hand towels with you?
Stingy with everything. me and Greg got into it. Me
really?
And Greg got into it a couple of times. We got into it.
I love it.
It was might have been 09 summer. Because we had, you know, the freshmen are coming in, right? And we're going to go out, we're going to throw. And these are young high school kids. Like, and they didn't have gloves.
Oh, boy.
And so Greg was being stingy with the gloves. And I'm like, Greg, dude, these kids are from high school. Like, they're now, they got to catch a senior in college's pass. They don't have gloves. Like, come on, let's make them feel comfortable. Let's get them. Like, gloves are like cheating in football.
Right.
It's like cleats. Like, you imagine running around with no cleats on? Like, you ain't got nothing to stick in. Like, you need your gloves. It's like a security blanket. So I remember we got into it. He's like, fine. He's like, you know what? You'll be paying for them when they get lost.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, Greg, all right, fine, dude. It's fine. Well, I'll pay for them, dude. Whatever.
Yeah. So when we were there, we used to, like, call the social currency with Greg. Like, basically the relationship that you kept up with him was, like, Greg tokens, right?
1,000%.
The more you built up Greg tokens, the more you had a chance of like going up and asking, hey, can I get a new pair of socks? And the response would be better than it would be worse. Oh God.
1,000%. You guys learned how to play the game. That's what you had to do. You had to kind of play the game to get the certain swag, get the certain gear.
I would go to coach K4. Sometimes.
Yeah. Oh. Right. Whatever needed.
Yeah. K4 was like, yeah, he was like when you get in trouble with mom and then you go to dad and dad's like, oh,
it was good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good cop, bad cop situation. Like if I really needed something, I remember there was a pair of shoes that came through. I think they were like the Huaraches and they came through and they were like, not a slip on, but it was the Huarache like trainer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, I got to have these, but I don't think they were giving them out. We were getting them shitty ass running shoes. That's like, you know, the ones you get you got to run train in this running shoe. It's not even meant for training. It's like meant for like linear, like treadmills. And you're out there like doing cone drills and you're flying around trying to like catch tennis balls and shit. I'm like, dude, where's the cross training shoes that we can like stick our foot in the ground, not feel like I'm blow an ankle out. I remember me and Brett Morris. I'm like, dude, we'll go in on Saturday. K4 will be in there. We'll go down to the baseball side of things. We'll get these shoes. And like K4 hooked us up and gave us the sneakers. I kept those shoes like into the league. I kept them as long as I could until they had a hole in them. They were that good of a shoe. I loved them. So there was, you know, you could finesse situations as you went through there. You kind of had to learn as you went though.
It warms my heart that nothing changed.
No,
like it was the same for you guys.
Yep.
We could talk for hours. A big one is KF, and you've sort of alluded to it all the way back to the beginning of the podcast. His big thing is, and it's not this way across the country in every program, is it's about the people, and mm-hmm. that's how they recruit. And they care about you as a football player, but they also care about getting you through the program as a man. And, mm-hmm. and really, I mean, it's hard to imagine a more transformative 4 years for a young, you know, kid's life, 4 or 5 years. What did you take away looking back now a decade later from Iowa and the coaching staff, as you matured as a young adult?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always tell people, like, you know, like you got the ped mall and you go down, that's like where all the learning goes on. Like,
oh, yeah.
The classrooms are, I didn't learn shit down there. But when I would sit in those meetings with yeah. Coach Ferentz, like that, I think it was like, that must've been like that Tuesday meeting. It might've been Monday. Okay. Where like, you know, we kind of get everybody back together and Kirk would just talk. He kind of like, he would weave football lessons and the life lessons, and we'd watch tape, and he'd talk about some figure or something that was going on. He always just related things back to life.
At a story like from 1981.
Yeah, like it could have been anything, but he would, in those meetings, I remember me and the boys would always talk about it. I'm like, I learned more about life, more about myself, just sitting in that Monday meeting with Kirk and just listening to what he had to say than I ever learned in school. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was like real world shit. Like, yes. It's like when you get your degree and then you leave and you can't do shit with it. It's like the shit that you learn from Coach Ferentz is real. Like, it's actually how you should conduct yourself when you're dealing with people. It's actually how you should conduct yourself when you're becoming a man and you want to grow a family and you want to, you know, venture out and start your own business. Or like, the Kirk Ferentz like taught me all that stuff. My dad taught me all that. Like, my dad, Coach Ferentz, Coach O'Keefe, those meetings with them, Coach Doyle, like those guys made us mentally tough. They made us sort of understand how to navigate adversity, how to keep your cool, how to not be a pussy when things were getting tough. And like, those are the things that like, that's still when I wake up today, that's still the same mentality. So like, for me, it was everything. And I'm not kidding when like, if Coach Ferentz wasn't there, if I met Coach Ferentz on my visit, I mean, if I don't know if I would have went there. Like, he was that impactful to me where it was like, man, I don't want to let this guy down. Yeah. Whatever I do, I don't want to let this guy down. And so, you know, those Monday meetings, those long talks that he would have, they went a long way. And I hope he knows that, because they really do transform people. Yeah, man, they're cool.
If you let KF down, that hurts. That hurts.
Yeah, right, right. And it's tough. You don't want to do that.
And I,
there's seminars that people pay for in business, like thousands and thousands of dollars, and they can't touch the meetings that we went through just getting to be a part of the program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I always thought of it as like KF and Doyle too. Oftentimes they would impart like the wisdom in those meetings. And that was like the psychological mental side or psychological side of things. And then in the summer, and then other parts of the year when the physical training was really, really hard, that was like the mental toughness side of things. And those two combined to create absolute savage, disciplined men. And it was, I mean,
yeah, you should feel like a warrior, you know, you should leave there and feel like, well, if I don't play pro football, so fucking what? I'll be good at whatever I want to be good at, because you just get this mentality about you that like, whatever shows itself, because it will, something will show itself, something that's going to try to knock you down to your knees. Are you going to stay there and live there? Or are you going to get the fuck up and keep moving? You know, it's like, that was what Iowa football was. It was like, this is a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
You have a sense of urgency to be better today than you were yesterday. And if you're not on that same page, life would be living hell for you. Yeah. It would not be fun to be there if you weren't on a growth mindset and you weren't constantly trying to find some fucking thing that you could get better at, even if it was something little. You know, I remember Coach Doyle said to me, he's like, you need to be a leader that looks in the mirror and doesn't look out the window. And what he meant by that was like, when shit hits the fan, when things go bad, look in the mirror, right? It's on you, fix it. It's always on you. You got to be the one that makes the change. When things are going great and everything's grand, go look out the window, go put praise on somebody else, go bump somebody else up, make them feel good. And like, that was one that like, that one sticks with me a lot. Cause I use that. I try to use that in my own life all the time. Like if something doesn't go the way you want, or you kind of fall down, that's the moment to hit the mirror. And I think a lot of people look out the window and they want to point and they want to blame. And I would see this in the NFL a lot. Oh, the GM doesn't like me. The head coach doesn't like me. No, you fucking suck. That's the problem. You're not really good. You know,
it's so
like,
true.
It is what it is. Like even when I play, people ask me about my career. I'm like, guys, I didn't play well. I didn't play well. I wasn't good at throwing the football like I needed to be at that level. Every time I got cut, I knew I needed to get cut. And I'd have like family members and stuff. Oh, you deserve it. I'm like, no, I don't. I don't deserve nothing. Like I deserve to go get better. I should go get better and keep. And that was part of what drove me my whole career after Iowa, like all the things that I learned at Iowa and all the struggles that I had in the NFL and the trying to understand movement and figure out what makes it work and what makes it not work was like a driving force to what I do today. So it's like, to me, what I'm doing today is still what I did at Iowa, because it's just been this continual flow, so yeah, to speak, of the same life lessons kind of playing out in a different arena. You know, I used to fight in Kinnick and now I'm fighting in a different arena, but it's the same, you know, lessons that I learned back there that I'm using in my day, whether it's being a, you know, a family man or whether it's being a businessman and trying to be a great coach to the next generation.
Man, a little Doyle wisdom will get me going like a little hit.
He just had to look at you sometimes. He ain't got to say nothing.
Fuck, I just had to look at you. I just had to be in the same room and I was turned on. I was turned up. So, we could, and I'd love to get into, we'll have you back sometime. We'll get into your NFL career and some of the things you went through there. And then obviously what you're doing now with athletes as well. Mm-hmm. So, Ricky, we appreciate your time, man. This is a great episode, and you ended it with a great quote. Look in the mirror, not the window.
Yeah, bro. I appreciate you guys having me, man. This was a blast. We'll do it again.
Episode 300 with the GOAT, Ricky Stanzi. Love it or leave it, right? We didn't even talk about that.
That's right, baby. Love it or leave it.
USA number one.
Hawks by a million.
Hawks by a million.
Hawks by a million. The Hawks by a million just floats right into that love it or leave it.
I know.
I thought I dropped that when we came back for Penn State.
I know.
She was like, yeah. I didn't even know about the Hawks by a million thing with you guys. But my buddy Brett, he was saying it. I'm like, dude, Hawks by a million. That's fucking genius. I'm like, who came up with this? And I didn't know it was you guys until I had seen a flag like later on. But I'm glad I threw it out. I'm like, all right, I'm going to say love it or leave it. Hawks by a million and put it out there. But yeah,
believe
that's
me,
a great saying.
We got blown up when you threw that out and it was awesome. It, you know, I was fully tented in the in the stadium when that happened.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna get you I'll get you in the messages after this and we'll get you a flag.
Okay, yeah, that'd be funny.
You need one. Like I said, 300 with the GOAT, Ricky Stanzi. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back again on Thursday. And we hope you enjoyed this one. Talk to you next time. Peace.